We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. The hour of 10:15 having arrived, February 15th. We do not yet have a quorum, so we will start the agenda today. Is Representative Dill here? Okay, then we'll go. I have a bill up that I'll just take from the chair here, House File 247. It's a bill that has to do with voluntary contributions to the state of Minnesota. I don't know if the members of the tax committee have constituents like I do that will come forward and say that they want to give more money to the state. And what this bill would do would be it would allow citizens to give more money to the state. They can, when somebody comes to me and says, we think that people should give more money to the state, I say, well, God bless you. We're going to take care of that. And come to find out in research, talking to the Department of Revenue and others, come to find out you can already do that. And so we'll be getting more information to the committee members on how you can do that. It actually goes to the Office of Management and Budget. And in talking to Mr. Michael, there's a recent contribution. Someone wanted to give money to the state, and my thought is just knock yourself out, get the checkbook out, and write till your heart's content. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, it's good to hear they can already do that. You know, we do live in an age of technology, and we have people all over the United States who are interested in our government here in Minnesota. So as we do move forward, I hope we can consider a PayPal website for people to voluntarily donate to the state of Minnesota.
Representative Biskins, I can see a bill coming. Okay. Thank you, Representative Biskins. So, when we have a quorum and we call the meeting to order, I will be withdrawing House File 247, and I'll be working on getting more information on making it easier for Minnesotans to voluntarily give all they would like to. Is next on the agenda would be House File 359, Representative Dill. We will go to the next. I do not see Representative Dill when he comes in. He would be next, but we will go now to House File 393, Representative House. If you could please join us, and Representative Howes, if you could please describe your bill to the committee. This one would be laid over, if the committee decides to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we do not have a quorum yet, so as soon as we do, Representative Howes, Chairman Howes, I will be interrupting you and taking care of a few administrative issues, but welcome to the committee, sir, if you could please present your bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, this deals with the accelerated sales tax payments previous to last year. It was only done for the June payment. Businesses over 120,000 in sales tax would have to pay in May, at the end of May. And then last year it was changed. I think the law took effect August 1st, if I'm not mistaken, of 2010, where they would have to do this every month. And I feel it's wrong. It's created a lot of work for our businesses. There are 45,000 or 4,500 businesses that do this. If it's just 3 hours a year, that's a lot of hours, manpower wasted at loaning the state a few dollars for an extra 10 to 20 days. And I don't think we should be doing this. It would also, there's no fiscal impact. I think it would also eliminate some of the work that the Department of Revenue has to do.
Okay, is there anyone that would wish to testify for or against the House bill? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe. I thank you for bringing this forward. I think it responds to a concern that I had heard from someone who works with small businesses in my community. And as I understood, it was done by administrative action to change some of the due dates. Is that correct?
Representative House.
I understood it was done in the tax bill last year, or one of the tax bills. Hmm. I could be mistaken.
Mr. Michael, could you help us out here?
Or Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this was enacted by the legislature as part of the special session budget bill, and it was done for cash flow purposes because at the time basically the administration thought that this might either prevent us, the state, from cash flow borrowing or reduce the amount of cash flow borrowing. There's sort of a long history about how this either-or option came to be, which Pat can talk about if you're interested in that.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just need to check with the person I talked to actually does taxes for small businesses, and it may have been a different issue because it was about something that had administratively been issued, unless it was just the interpretation of how to apply this law. I'm not sure. So I'll have to get more information. When I saw this bill, I thought it was addressing that issue.
Okay. Any other questions of the author? Anyone wish to testify for or against? We now have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting to order of the House Tax Committee. Representative Drazkowski moves the minutes of February 10th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Then to go in order here before we get back to the House bill and take action on that. As I announced to the committee, House File 247 is being withdrawn at this point. That's the bill that sets up an account or accounts so that people that come to me or you as legislators and say, we really think that people should be giving more money to the state, this bill would allow them to write checks all day long and send them in. But you can already do that. And so I just want to make sure that people realize that you can do that because I had some constituents, and, of course, we want to take care of our constituents on those issues. So with that being said, I will move House File 393 be recommended to pass. I see no amendments. Excuse me, not recommended to pass. I withdraw that. Recommend to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Howes. Representative Dill, I saw him somewhere. And then the last bill is... Okay, it would be Drazkowski's 66. Okay. We now have before us, I will move that... I will move House File, when the motion comes, that House File 359 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Dill, welcome to the Tax Committee. If you could please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members of the committee. Last year we had this bill before us. It was laid over for possible inclusion. It had similar amendments to it that we have before us. And to get the bill in the shape that we'd like to have it in, there's a delete all amendment. It's the DE1 amendment. And also then, Mr. Chairman, after the delete all is, if it is adopted, there's also the 59A1 amendment that gets it completely in the shape that we would like to have it in as it moves forward.
Okay, let's get it in the order the author would like. I will move to amend House File 359 with the HO359DE1 amendment. We got to do this first. Okay. And then I will then move that the H0359A1 amendment be passed. Any discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I will now move the H0359DE1 amendment as amended. Any discussion on that? Anyone from the audience testify for or against the amendment as amended? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 359 as amended. Representative Dill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. This has to do with where the point at which imposition of sales tax is applied, for example, on vehicle repairs. It has to do with the fact that there are three different types of software that are used in the industry to calculate the repairs, the supplies, and currently the vendors that are making these repairs pay the sales tax when they purchase the supplies, where normally it's done at a wholesale level and then charged out at a retail level. But because of the industry software that's available, there's no real line item to do such. Mr. Wally's here to answer any technical issues. Mr. Chairman, there is also the Department of Revenue is here. They have a couple of small technical issues that we intend to resolve during the period of time which this bill is laid over, and everyone has agreed to work on it jointly. There, it is nothing that is insurmountable. This bill actually does raise money Last year, it was not included because it raised money, which is just for me hard to imagine. It raised around over $2.5 million in each of the years. It will in the future raise about $2.5 million or more, $2.4 and $2.8 in the coming years. And so with that, I'll have Mr. Wally answer any questions you may have on the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Dell. Any questions? Let's do this first. Is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify against House File 359 as amended? Anyone that wishes to testify for House File 359 as amended? Any questions from members of the to the author or Mr. Wally? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I can tell you, I've spoken with a couple of auto repair shops in my district that are in favor of this bill. They see this as an appropriate tax treatment. They have pointed out also that it ends up actually being a net positive to the state's revenues, and so on their behalf, I would certainly encourage a yes vote on this bill. But and thank Representative Dill for bringing it forward.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, does this signify an increase for the consumer in what they pay?
Representative Dill.
No, I don't. I'll actually have Mr. Wally answer that. I do not believe it does, because in the end analysis, there's a recapture some way or another of the sales taxes that the person pays, the company pays when they buy this stuff at what should be a wholesale, but they end up buying it retail, and some way it gets in there. I think this is more of an actual way to recapture that and show it in a line item. And I'll have Mr. Wally ask that technical issue.
Mr. Wally, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kevin Wally. I represent the Alliance of Automotive Service Providers, which is the trade association for the repair industry. In response to Representative Anderson's question, there is a bump up in the basis upon which the tax is applied. So that accounts for the increase. But this is the mechanism whereby the repair shops would have the opportunity to recover or avoid actually having to pay out the sales tax at the wholesale level, which under the current systems in the industry, they have no opportunity to recover later on. So this allows exemption at the front end at the wholesale level and the capture of the sales tax at the retail level.
Representative Anderson. Any further questions of Representative Dill or Mr. Wally? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. And I have my cone on because I have to go across the street and speak to a group, so I'm just ready to leave. Mr. Wally, first question is, the way they're going to calculate this tax sounds rather cumbersome, so do you think the Commissioner of Revenue will choose a simpler way? Because it sounds to me like the repair pain and supply portion of a bill can be calculated by subtracting the number of labor hours multiplied by an hourly rate from the bill. Who's going to have to do that? The manager, the person in charge of bookkeeping at our small repair shops, or am I missing something?
Mr. Wally.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that will be accomplished at the level of the repair shop. And they have the mechanisms in place because all of the repair shops are currently obliged to use one of three estimating software platforms in order to do any of the repairs that they do. In order to be in business in the state and to submit a claim for payment by an insurance company, for example, you have to use one of these three systems. And so they have the wherewithal at the shop level to make the calculation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wally, however, there is this sentence in the overview that says allows the taxpayer to petition the Commissioner of Revenue to use another method. So why do we need that other method then?
I believe,
Mr. Wally.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I believe that provision is amended in the amendment to the delete all amendment, which has already been adopted.
I'm sorry, yes, and I would have missed that. I'm sorry about that. And then one last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wally, is this this tax, this particular use tax, is it prevalent throughout our automotive industry or in other industries where repair is done to the body of a car or another vehicle, or perhaps in other areas where consumers are going to face this possible increase in costs?
Mr. Wally?
Representative Erickson, currently the repair shops are obliged to pay the sales tax at the wholesale level because they don't have the ability to itemize right now. And so what this does is it allows them specifically to put a line item on the invoice which accounts for the paint and supplies in order that they may have the tax collected at that level rather than out of their pockets.
Representative Dill, to that point.
To that point. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Erickson, let me give you an example. As you know, I have airplanes, and I recently had one damaged by hail. I got a bill from the repair shop, and it said $28,000. That's it. They paid the sales tax on the wholesale level, but they don't have to go through this estimating, and there's so few aircraft claims that the insurance companies just deal with it the way I just described. And they paid for those. I am certain that they paid, and I'm sure the revenue is certain that they paid for the sales tax when they purchased the equipment, the supplies, the paint, the thinner, and those types of things. I also had a family member that had the misfortune of hitting a rock with a boat. And when I received the bill from, my insurance company received the bill from the from Crestliner, who did the repairs, it said labor, paint and supplies, sales tax. But again, they don't use these nationally recognized software. And a number of claims we had in our environment committee, we had this testimony that just deer claims on cars, I don't remember, maybe Representative Knuth remembers the number, but it was almost staggering the number of claims that are had by, you know, and so you got to look at how many of these happen and how many of these happen, and that's the reason for the software, and that's for the reason for this bill, and that's for the reason for the clarifications on where the point of sales tax is imposed.
Representative Erickson?
That's good.
Any other questions of Representative Dill or Mr. Wally? Hearing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 359, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 66, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, House File 66 is a repeal of the political contribution refund. The bill, members, really the heart of the bill is the repealer, which you'll find attached to the bill. And the other pages are simply cross-references that need to be eliminated in statute. I think everybody's familiar with this. It was in Chair David's, actually it was in House File 130, and we have looked at repealing this some would argue, illegitimate function of government in the past. You will see some information in your packets, including the fact that the repeal of this will end the spending of about $12 million per biennium on this program, make it available to offset a portion of the projected deficit. And you also see a sheet that outlines from Mr. Goldsmith over at the Campaign Finance Board, a comparison between party use of the program in the past and incumbent versus challenger. A side benefit of this is that it will put the challengers on stronger footing with incumbents. I guess it could be argued, but certainly not my motivation for the bill. We need to solve the deficit, and that's what we're doing here, members.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just let me know, what was the motion? Was it to send the bill to GovOps, or was it to lay it over, or to pass it, or what?
There is no motion at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? All right, Representative Dress. Oh, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Drazkowski. I know historically your party has done better than ours in taking advantage of this fund. But I have to say that to me, it's really a key issue about whose voice do we want to listen to in elections, and that we had the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling that said campaign contributions are free speech. And to me, the political contribution assures that the voice of all citizens are heard, including people who live paycheck to paycheck and have a hard time contributing without the promise of that refund. And I've always seen it as a trade-off, in that in exchange for agreeing to strict spending limits, to limiting the amount of PACs, lobbyists, and special interest funds that a candidate will take to a minor part of their overall campaign financing, which I think most citizens agree they don't want the special interests to run our campaigns, that in exchange for that commitment, then their citizens are facilitated in being able to contribute with getting a small rebate of their donations. And it seems to me that passage of this would actually be the opposite statement, which is that we support and want encourage getting candidates more dependent on PACs and special interest funding because our individual donors won't have as easy access to being able to participate. And could you tell me how you see this influencing elections in the future?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Loeffler. As a matter of fact, Representative, if you look at the sheet provided by the Campaign Finance Board, it appears as if the last two elections, actually doesn't include the 2010 elections, but both 06 and 08 was actually utilized by the DFL more than it was the Republicans. But I will offer that I believe this is one of, or maybe the only, example of a political contribution refund program like this in the country. I can't remember the numbers. I think we are the only one, Representative. I would argue that, this is not a legitimate function of government, and that if people want to contribute, we encourage them to contribute organically.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Drazkowski. It's interesting because I think the handout that you have is the number, and the information I have is actually dollars. And I have that the Republican Party had $1,000,948 in dollars, and the DFL party units had $655,590 in dollars. And I think that probably reflects the fact that some of us have districts where you're more likely to get a $10 or $15 donation than a $75 donation. But you're right that we are a national leader in this, although other states have actually adopted similar sort of policies. And the nonpartisan Campaign Finance Institute at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. did a study, and it showed it actually has had its intended impact in that in Minnesota, 45% of all campaign financing comes from individuals. And that's what I think the citizens want, is that we're accountable to the individuals that we represent in our district, and that the nationwide average is 9%. And so we've actually achieved what I think was the political goal of this, which was to empower the average voter to be the financial engine of our political campaigns rather than large donors and special interests. And so to me, I think that's a really important statement. I mostly want to have everyone who serves in our house where we serve under a saying that says the voice of the people is the voice of God, and we're always told on Capitol tours that that's because we're to remember we're to represent the people, the individual citizens and voters in our districts. And I think that having our campaigns fueled primarily by that source to me is a really important statement. And I represent a lot of people who wouldn't contribute or couldn't contribute without this. And because their budgets are very limited, they're very low income, most of my constituents are renters, and this is a really important way in which they feel like they're connecting to the government and helping select who will represent them. So I think it's good that we're outstanding in the nation, and I think that we should continue that.
Response, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Loeffler, thank you again for sharing your thoughts there. You know, in my campaign, I don't take any PAC or lobbyist dollars, and people still contribute, and I believe that they will contribute if they believe in the cause that they are potentially contributing to. The question here is about priorities. Is our priorities that we fund nursing homes and group homes, or that we provide cash for politicians? I would maintain that people in Minnesota suggest this should be on the bottom of our priority list, and we should get moving.
Right. Members, I have a list running. I'll just run through it, and then if you wish to be heard, just let me know. We'll add you. Right now I have Garofalo, Biskins, Crawford, Gottwald, Sarah Anderson, and Representative Downey. So, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Drazkowski addressed my thoughts on this matter. It's a good piece of legislation, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a Republican, and I think the one election we had without this system seemed to turn out just fine. So let's leave it that way.
Representative Drazkowski?
No comment, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if this question is for staff or Representative Drazkowski, but I is a political contribution that has not been refunded, is that a tax-deductible event?
I'll direct that to Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, no, it is not tax-deductible.
Right. Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then Representative Drazkowski, the net effect then of this legislation is to actually leave more dollars in the general fund for other spending, I'm assuming. And I do see this as one way, at least, a very tiny way in which taxpayers do have some control of the tax dollars that they send to the state. And I hope we can look for a mechanism then to save the taxpayers some money absent this event.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Biskins.
All right. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Drazkowski, does this affect the spending limits at all on any of the campaigns?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Crawford, it does not.
Representative Crawford. Follow up? Thank you. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Drazkowski, thank you for bringing the bill. You know, to the point about whether or not we want individuals and not big special interest groups funding campaigns, I welcome that, Representative Loeffler. I think we need to go a lot further on that in the state, and I won't get into the division among partisan groups about special interest groups funding campaigns, but I think Minnesota already has campaign spending limits in place about how much we can raise in small contributions versus large contributions, and I think that is a very good, a strong strength of our system that has very little to do with whether or not we have taxpayers subsidizing basically personal choice contributions to the party of their choice and freedom of speech. Truth of the matter is, I think if somebody wants to fund me as a Republican or you as a Democrat, they have the right to do that with their money. Why we have a government taxpayer-funded subsidy back for doing what is really just a free choice, if you want to talk about true free speech, is a bit puzzling to me. And I realize this is not going to solve the budget deficit in and of itself. But I think if you put this to my constituents, they would agree that this money should be spent better elsewhere.
Thank you. Do you have a response, Representative Drazkowski?
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Gottwald. I would just add to what Representative Gottwald just offered, in that if we as members go back to our districts next weekend and ask our friends and neighbors if they believe that subsidizing the campaigns of politicians should be a priority in the budget, I believe it would be a resounding no. It would not take us very long to realize that we need to move to the next agenda item, Madam Chair.
All right. Next, I have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, I just wanted to thank you for bringing this forward. I do believe, as you do, that I don't think that we can expect the citizens, when we're addressing the $6.2 billion deficit, to continue to fund politicians in their campaign efforts. So I'm glad that you have brought this forward. And just to comment to Representative Loeffler's comments, I would hope that people don't feel that they need to contribute in order to participate in the election process. They have their voice no matter whether or not they contribute. And that's something that I have focused on quite a bit with my constituents, that their voice is heard, and make sure that I voice that when I'm here at the Capitol, whether or not they gave me money or not. So,
thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Draskowski. I think I offered this as an amendment previously, so I'm very supportive of this. And part of my perspective is with regard to the fact that I think over time this program is really an incumbent protection mechanism as compared to an access for new people into the process. And, Madam Chair, if I could, I see Mr. Goldsmith. Could I just ask a couple of clarifying questions on how this fund actually works?
Yes. Mr. Goldsmith, if you would join Representative Draskowski and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board.
Right, thank you. All right, Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Goldsmith, just to confirm, and I've not participated in the program, so I might not know all the details, but is there anything that requires a candidate to fully expend in that campaign cycle all of the funds that are generated through the political contribution refund?
Mr. Goldsmith?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, no. Unlike the direct payment portion of the public subsidy program where you are required to spend all of that money on campaign expenditures, there's actually no way to track the amount of money that is raised through this program. It's really a revenue program. We get some rough figures, but no, there is not.
Representative Downey?
Madam Chair, thank you. Just a comment then. I'm looking at the sheet that I assume came from Representative Draskowski in the packet about the size of the PCR contributions comparing incumbents versus non-incumbents, and you can see that incumbents far outdo challengers with this. And my own personal experience, and I think just by virtue of Mr. Goldsmith's response, incumbents can bankroll this stuff year over year. And I know some of the communication that I saw in my district before I ran, the incumbent would convey some need for constituent service and all kinds of other things as part of their plea for the $50 contribution, and the basic plea was, well, you can get your money back, help me out, I need your money, and it goes towards all kinds of things. And so maybe just a final question for Mr. Goldsmith. Is there any prohibition in the types of solicitations that incumbents can do to generate these kinds of contributions? In other words, are they exclusively required to focus only on campaign as compared to non-campaign expenses in their solicitations, or can they pretty much put whatever they want in their solicitation letters?
Mr. Goldsmith.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, they can do any kind of solicitation they want. The money raised through these types of contributions would not have to be targeted to getting reelected, but could be used for other legal purposes.
Representative Downey.
Just a final comment. I just think from an incumbent protection standpoint, this program is really unfairly skewed, and if it were to continue, I think we need to address that somehow through changes to the current law and the mechanisms by which people can solicit contributions and whether or not you have to expend them or you can bankroll them. It really makes it hard for a challenger to come in against a multi-year incumbent who's been doing this for years and years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sitting here listening around the table, hearing people talk about how, this is ridiculous, government bankrolling politicians. And I'm thinking about, in keeping with that maxim, you don't know what you got till it's gone, and the current news events of uprisings around the Middle East and other people in governments who everyone knows have not had access to affecting their governments. And we see what happens when over the course of years people do not have access to their governments and free and fair elections and the civil unrest which results. People also realize that you don't have to, in order to challenge an incumbent, you don't have to have more money than them. You just have to have enough to be a player. And it doesn't surprise me that incumbents will gain more off this program than will challengers. But there is a point of diminishing returns for every incumbent. You spend a lot of money. At a certain point, if you're not representing your constituents well up here at the Capitol, you're not going to get reelected, and people will beat you with less money. So if you give a challenger just enough of a foothold to make your case, well, yeah, some of us incumbents up here are going to have to be worried. And someone could beat me if I spend $35,000, $40,000, and they spend $10,000 if they've got a good enough message. So I don't think it's just a matter of incumbents are gaining more off this than others. And I also look at this as the difference between why are we different here in Minnesota versus the rest of the United States with respect to elections. I remember when I was in college, I wasn't interested in politics that much at the beginning of college. But towards the end of college, I saw some people who were in service, and I thought, you know, I might be interested, but I know the only time that I would run properly is if I went home to Minnesota, because they have clean politics up there, and I've seen politics in other parts of the country, and I don't know if I'd really want to be involved. And all of us here know I've been involved in the NCSL, CSG, some of these other groups, and we know what goes on in some of those other states and some of the corruption. I have a friend of mine who represents a district in Philadelphia, and you don't even want to know the stuff that he does or how he raises money to get elected and the amount of money that he spends to get elected. So I think we really need to be careful about just saying, you know what, this is excess and this is unneeded, because there's a difference between us and the rest of the country, and there's also a difference between the United States and for those who have traveled and other parts of the world. So I guess I would say we should be cautious and leave members with that note that we have something here that's pretty special, and just to disregard it would, I think, be premature.
Thank you. Representative Jaskowski, feel free to make a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The discussion has been good. Members, I appreciate it. I think as we look at this, we can look at whether or not this particular exercise that we have been involved with for the past couple decades, I assume, is a priority of government, especially given the situation we are in. Many of us, I believe, would, as we listen to our constituents, believe that this is not even a legitimate function of government. Madam Chair, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you. Representative Myra.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Draskowski. I was one of those challengers this last year, and I was glad that we didn't have that refund. I was able to win a very tight race. I'm still amazed that I won. But I'm really appreciative of this bill. I think it puts the incumbent and the challenger on the same level, and I think it's very important, and I appreciate your bringing it.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Draskowski. And I think the point of hard budget times call for all sorts of solutions, I think, is an important one. But I just want to remind members of what a program like this does and what our spending limits do and what the size of our legislature do. And a legitimate role of government is to provide free, open, clear, transparent, and accessible elections. I think that's very important. And I'm under no, I have no belief that if I was running elsewhere in this country as a 24 to 25-year-old woman earning $30,000 a year with nearly $20,000 of student loan debt and inability to pay any of my own campaign, and coming in and really wanting to serve the people of my state, it allows people who don't always have access, not just to have the ear of an elected representative, but to actually think themselves that they could do something like that. And I think Minnesota is a place where people of all different backgrounds and all different stages of life can actually think, hey, I could do that. And I think that makes our democracy better. And that said, I don't know if in a really difficult budget time this is the program that's at the top of the list, but I certainly don't think a wholesale repeal of it without thinking about why elections in Minnesota are special. And I can tell you, going around the country, Representative Lesh, I agree there's a lot of places I wouldn't necessarily want to run for office. And I think there's a lot of places that I legitimately probably couldn't run for office. And Minnesota is special because people with different means, different backgrounds, of different ages can come and not just have their voice heard at the Capitol, but to be helping to have on the debate on the House floor all these different perspectives and have all the different people that have access to them. And I think that's important and something that we need to remind ourselves about why people have a strong belief in their government being open, transparent, and clean. And that's something I value very much, and I think Minnesotans really value as well.
Representative Draskowski, comment?
No, really no comments, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank
you. Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, well, not really a question to Representative Draskowski. Maybe Mr. Goldsmith can just comment. You know, just kind of listening to everybody here. You know, and I carried the bill to cut this temporarily, so now you're looking at making it permanent. So I understand the issues here. However, I have supported some of the things Representative Loeffler has laid out. But I think there's a little confusion here on, you know, does this program make people do more or less spending? You know, my look at the numbers is the rural members are really hit by this going away. Representative Downey and I, as Representative Downey stated, you know, we just do fine whether it's there or not. So I think if you look regionally at who's able to raise money, really doesn't have a lot to do with this program. And I think with or without the program, incumbents around the country, with whether there's these programs or not, always have a better opportunity to raise revenue. I mean, that's kind of politics 101. I think people understand that. But I think something that, because I noticed this bill has only been sent to taxes, which honestly surprises me, this is a huge elections issue, and I think it should have gone to that committee. But since it didn't, I think this is, you know, we're left being the committee to talk about it. So I will say this, that for folks who have lived with and without the program, you know, all of us who are returning members have had it, not had it. You know, if you go back and look, you know, for me personally, if I look at all my challengers, it doesn't matter if it's there or not, they can't raise close to what I can because I'm an incumbent. I mean, that, you know, so that I think that's kind of off the track of the issue here. What people, the public may not know, listening to us discuss this program, and maybe Mr. Goldsmith can correct me if I'm wrong, to participate in this program, the legislator who decides if it was to return, if, you know, if this program comes back, you must limit your spending. You must limit how much special interest money you can take. You must limit how the size of the donors and how much they can give you, and you must limit how much money you can loan yourself. So to have these people get this refund, you have to agree to all kinds of stuff that if you don't have it, you don't have to agree to. So if you go look at different members' campaign finance reports around here, some people raise $75,000, some people raise $10,000. And there is a whole bunch of criteria that takes place that absolutely has the effect of reducing the impact of PAC money, of special interest, of size of donor, of all that kind of stuff. It's a full package. It's not just this thing. So, you know, it may be that in budget times this program has to go forever, or it maybe it comes back. I don't know. But what I would say is there's a lot more going on in this program than just the PCR. And I think the whole elections committee, the committee that deals with it, should be discussing this, because a permanent repeal of this means maybe all that other stuff should go as well, because that's part of the thing. You all sign, for all of you who have participated in it, and many have not, or not many, but maybe 5% of legislators have not, and it's on both sides of the aisle. You're not signing all this stuff that all the legislators who do participate in this program agree to. So it's a very different package of campaign law.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. I kind of cracked a joke earlier, but I do want to actually be serious for a second and address something Representative Winchesky said, and that is that whether or not, Mr. Goldsmith address this, whether or not you sign off on the public subsidy, the aggregate contribution limits still apply
to
you.
That's true.
I mean, so saying that whether we have a public subsidy program at all outside of that's a separate issue from public, this contribution, those contributions are capped, and you ain't going to get any more or any less from them. I just want to confirm that from the testifier.
Well, thank you. And let's have Mr. Goldsmith respond to that. If you could just, I think for the committee's benefit, many of us may know this, but for new members as well, what participation in the public subsidy program commits a candidate to.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm glad to have this opportunity to just give a little bit of an overview, because I did this in the policy committees and the budget committees that oversee the campaign finance board, but I haven't had an opportunity to do it in this committee. First of all, campaign finance law really is based on a 1974 case in the Supreme Court, Buckley versus Vallejo, and several principles were laid out in that case that Minnesota follows and Minnesota cases have followed. Number one is the state cannot limit the amount of money that a candidate can spend on their election. that it can only be done by voluntary agreement of the candidate. So people who believe that we have spending limits, we do, but only because people agree to them voluntarily, and nobody has to do that. What makes people volunteer to limit their spending? It's the benefits that the state is willing to give in trade-off for limiting your spending, and those benefits are primarily, or have been primarily, two, both in the form of public subsidy. One is the contribution refund program. The other is the program where direct public subsidy is paid to candidate committees, and the means of that is through a legislative appropriation and a secondary appropriation that's steered by the tax checkoff on the tax returns that taxpayers file. But it's all general fund money. To say that repealing the contribution refund program won't have any effect on spending limits is generally a true statement. In fact, we didn't see a significant drop in participation in the public subsidy program when this program was gone during the last election. There was a drop, but I don't think it was significant enough to blame it on the contribution refund program not being there. On the other hand, I've heard members in the discussion this morning talk about public subsidy in general as a concept not being a part of government function. And if public subsidy as a concept, that is the direct payment programs, are also gone, there will be no spending limits because there will be no incentive for people to sign those agreements. And then any candidate will be able to spend as much as they want on their elections. And Minnesota elections in the House, for example, will go from $30,000 to $35,000 per candidate to who knows how many multiples of that. So whether that's a function of government or not is a decision that you have to debate and determine. But the public subsidy programs, I think, are largely responsible for keeping our elections inexpensive in Minnesota. And just then to point out two things about this particular program in itself, the contribution refund program. One thing that hasn't been noticed very often is that actually more than 60% of the cost of this program is for refunds that go to party units, not candidates. And party units spend that money, of course, on candidates, but it doesn't have the same effect as a candidate. Party units don't have to agree to anything to participate. They automatically participate. So that has no effect on spending limit agreements. And secondly, the board in the past has recognized something that was of a concern to them with regard to party units, in particular state party units. We do get a report from the Department of Revenue indicating how much, for example, the Republican Party of Minnesota or the DFL state party unit have issued in contribution refunds. We go back and look at their state reports and see if they had enough donors to justify those refunds. And with the state party units, we were finding that not to be the case. We learned that they were actually refunding contributions that were made to their federal party units rather than the state party units. So much of that money that went back to state party units wasn't even being used for state elections. We pointed that out to the Department of Revenue, and they determined that under the statute there was no requirement that these contributions be used for state elections, and so party units could continue to do that. And that's fluctuated on and off. Of course, that's not the case with candidates who have to use their money for state elections. So with that, I think, the other thing I'll clarify is that typically Democratic candidates use the program slightly more than Republican candidates, but Democratic Party units use the program much less than Republican Party units. And this is a function of party operation, how much they want to emphasize and promote the program. That balance could be shifted by a concerted effort, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. We have a question from Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, the testifier's comments just made me think of a slightly related but maybe unrelated question for Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski, has the chamber weighed in at all on your bill?
Representative Drazkowski?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, not that I'm aware of.
Okay, well, Lesh? Madam Chair, the reason I ask is I know what I think maybe a lot of people would think about if we have chamber support. You know, this would be great. But I seem to recall when issues like this came up in years past of being told confidentially by a couple of chamber members, what are you doing and what are you going to ask us to fund now? Because You know, we're going to switch from a government financing system to essentially a chamber financing system, and not you know, just necessarily exclusively Republican. People will weigh in that way in different ways. We'll ask organized labor to do that, but as members of this committee know, the difference of what was spent this last election by business versus by organized labor, and that is by no means going to just break down and say, okay, well, now Republicans win, because the tables have ways of leveling out and evening out regardless. And I was just wondering about that, because when it comes down to it, and there are additional new initiatives that come up, whether it's a statewide constitutional amendment or what have you, I was just curious. I'd be wondering about what they'd have to say if they were here today, and they're not. So that's all, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lesch, I haven't heard from the unions or the tribes as well.
Representative Garofalo, I apologize. You were not finished with your questioning, and I moved on. So,
well, it was a follow up, so I moved myself to the front of the line, and I apologize. But I just want to point out, because other members of the committee have talked about this issue of access and somehow ability to raise money, and that argument may hold water if we were in a primary state. We're not. We're in a caucus state, and if you want to lose the endorsing convention at a local level, walk in and brag about how much money you can raise. Endorsing conventions and delegates of both the Republicans and Democrat parties could care less about fundraising. Well, on the Democrat side, you guys don't even care about the endorsement process, period. So on the Republican side, though, definitely contributing doesn't matter. Your access to raise money doesn't matter. We have a caucus process that guarantees that any and all people can participate in the process. That's why this program is one of many reasons why this program is not needed.
Thank you. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do support this bill as well. And I think the other thing that, Mr. Goldsmith, you can maybe address, because I know you have a lot of historical knowledge, which I greatly appreciate. And I believe, you know, one of the things that says that a comment was made that candidates are spending less money on their campaigns, but what I have noticed is the independent expenditures have increased. And so it's kind of like overall, you know, all you did was shift, you know, where it comes from, which has less oversight, less control, less transparency, away from the candidate, which actually is where you have the maximum transparency and information. So do you remember a time when we did not have independent expenditures, or when they were much less lower? And you have kind of a chart of it might show the amount of money spent on campaigns, but then also correspondingly shows a chart on the independent expenditure money.
Mr. Goldsmith.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I do have such a chart. It's not, I don't have it with me, but I have it in my mind. And I can tell you that independent expenditures were a fairly minor part of Minnesota campaign finance activity for a long time, because there was a statute that said that any expenditure by a party unit who has a candidate on the ballot could not, by definition, be an independent expenditure. In other words, it was a contribution, even if it was made without coordination. That statute was challenged by the Republican Party of Minnesota, who prevailed. That was in the 90s when I was assistant director of the board. And after that challenge, party units then could make independent expenditures, and that was the first wave of increases, and they started growing since then. In the 2006 election, the last time everybody was up for election, I believe total independent expenditures were about $18 million, with a little more than half of that being party units and the remaining part being political committees and funds. But these were all entities registered with the board, so the same transparency is there as is with candidate expenditures. We expected in this last election to see independent expenditures grow phenomenally with the introduction of corporate money. However, at least with respect to the reports filed before the general election, and that's the last ones we've quantified, that didn't happen. What we saw rather was party unit independent expenditures drop back quite a bit in favor of expenditures by these new groups that could use corporate and other money. So I'm not sure. I think we're going to see a significant increase, but not as big as we thought.
Representative Kiffmeyer, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, Mr. Goldsmith, you didn't, the 527s on the, as well, if I recall right, a lot of these are 527s, which I believe do not go through the Minnesota Campaign Finance Board. Is that correct?
Mr. Goldsmith?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, to some extent that's correct. 527 is simply an internal revenue tax classification for a political organization. That organization may register as a political committee or fund with the board, and some have, but that organization may also take the position that it is an issue-only type organization that doesn't do what we would define as independent expenditures. In Minnesota, an independent expenditure must expressly advocate the election or defeat of a candidate. It has to use the words vote for, vote against, support, elect, etc. No doubt all of you saw some ads this year that were topic-based. Even though they may have shown officials in the ad, they didn't say vote for or vote against. They may have said the right to choose is important. Only one candidate supports the right to choose. Call and thank this candidate. That type of ad doesn't fall under Minnesota statutes relating to campaign finance because of what some call a loophole and others just recognize as the way the statutes are written, because it's not express advocacy, it's not an independent expenditure, and all of those are outside of campaign finance regulation and disclosure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith.
Thank you. Other questions from members of the committee? If not, at this time, if there's any members from the public who wish to testify for or against this legislation, if you would come forward. Is there anyone? All right. Representative Draskowski, any other words with the committee?
I'd just like to thank everyone for the well-rounded discussion. That's about it, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you.
Can I ask Representative Draskowski a question on a personal note?
Yes, Representative Rickazian.
Representative Draskowski, do you think a corporation is a human being? Just you personally.
Representative Draskowski.
There's no out of order here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do I think a corporation is a human being?
Yeah. Would you want one to babysit your kids or take care of your grandparents or whatever?
Representative Draskowski.
Walmart. Let's say Walmart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wouldn't want anybody other than Representative Rukavina, other than my relatives, or certainly you, Representative Rukavina.
I would take very good care. If I took care of your kids, Representative Draskowski, they would be Democrats in a week. But let me just say this, you know. I think I'm the only one at the table besides Representative Runbeck and I who were here before there was this program. And, you know, at the time when I ran in 86, the range was really, really, they had lost a quarter of their population. People just, you know, walked to the bank and gave their keys to their house and their car and left to try to find a job. But there were still a lot of retirees left who had fought for many, many years to get a decent pension, and they remembered the times when, you know, John D. Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie ran the Iron Range like a fiefdom. So, you know, that's what's going to happen again, except it's going to be the whole state being run like a fiefdom. And there's no way that union money can compete with corporate money. And, you know, we can see that in an election going on today on the Iron Range where there's been, I believe, 11 mailers now by the Republican Party into a district that's never given more than 35% of the vote to a Republican in the last three quarters of a century. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But in the end, everyone at this table will lose if corporate America keeps running this country like they're running it now. So that's just my observation.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Rukavina, if you were here back before this program was in place, I think you just made the argument that this is a pro-incumbent program that we have since you're still here. So,
no,
members,
I'm here, Representative
Anderson, are you finished with your question?
I am. I'm sorry I said anything.
Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
You know that I'm here because I'm so charming, and that's why you like me.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify on this proposal for or against? Not? Other questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope that we'll be referring this bill, if it's going to be considered seriously, to the Government Operations and Elections Committee, because I think the debate has highlighted that its impact is much more than the financial impact, which actually I think is in a different budget than ours as well, but also in terms of its influencing who runs for office, who they're accountable to, and whether or not the other parts of our system that Mr. Goldsmith described need to be adjusted if this program is to go away, because I do think all of our constituents would actually rather have it work the way they thought they learned about it in fourth grade, which is people run from their community, supported by their community, and decided by their community. And I think many of them resent the outside money, no matter where it comes from, and really wish it was a local decision. And I really do think that this kind of improves that opportunity for it to be much more weighted towards those local people. And so I hope that we'll send this to the election committee if it's going to be further considered, because I think it does influence who runs, who stays, and who's accountable to who.
Representative Knuth.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And on Representative Loeffler's point, are we voting on this? Is it going to be laid over? Would a motion be?
There's no motion.
We don't have a motion yet. Representative Drazkowski, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. Given the fact that there is a good segment of the committee that would like to see it go to government ops, I'm certainly willing to include that in my motion. Madam Chair, members, I would move that the bill pass and move to the Government Operations Committee.
All right. So there is a motion on the floor. I'm sorry, Representative Knuth, I just wanted to get that in there because I had a feeling that's where it was going. Did you have further comments or questions?
Nope, just wanted that clarification. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. So, motion is on the floor that House File 66 be adopted and referred to the Government Operations Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Opinion of the Chair, the ayes have it. Motion's adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe the fiscal analysts know this question. I know with the change in the majority decides what accounts sit where. Can someone tell us where this account sits? My recollection is this account doesn't even sit in the tax committee. So do you know where this account for this funding sits in your committee structure?
I personally do not, Representative Drazkowski. Mr. Michael, do we have a...
Madam Chair, I believe it's here, but I'll defer to the fiscal analysts who handle these matters.
Yes, Ms. Shrill, if you would care to enlighten us.
Kathy Schell, House Fiscal Analysis. Yes, it's that particular item is contained in the tax aids and credits spending spreadsheet.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, Madam Chair, then, if that's the case, then after it goes to GovOps, it certainly needs to get to Representative Runbeck's committee, since she's got the account. So, it has been kind of confusing to figure out why bills are going where, and I think the accounts help us understand which chair ultimately makes that decision, and we've just learned it's Chair Runbeck. So I hope that as folks who want the bill to pass keep working on it, they'll ensure it gets back to the Property Tax Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. All right. Thank you. And members, are in your packet there is a list of bills to be that are proposed to be referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. You see that it's House File 12, House File 399, House File 445, House File 481, House File 492, and House File 514. So, without objection, those bills will be referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. Members, with that, we have went through our agenda today. So, thank you. Committee's adjourned. Good government all the time.